You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Monday show, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Hope everybody had a great weekend. We've got a jam-packed episode coming your way. The first major domino falling for the Seahawks in what is going to be an unprecedented offseason as we head into free agency next week. Today's episode is brought your way by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON20. And you'll get 20% off your next order. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. With extension talks failing to gain traction, Carlos Dunlap and the Seahawks have officially parted ways, at least for now. Seattle released the veteran defensive end on Monday. We can't say, Rob, that this was really a surprise move, because there's been speculation since even after the Seahawks traded for Dunlap back in October that this may be the eventual outcome. At the same time, when you consider how well Dunlap played in the 8 games that the Seahawks had him and the impact that he had individually as well as making everybody around him play better, to that extent, it is surprising that this quickly, when we still have 9 days till free agency opens, that the team decided to cut bait now.
Yeah, it is surprising, as you mentioned, that the team decided to release Carlos Dunlap at this point with time still left before his guarantee and that extended salary. Because you almost wonder if Seattle might have been able to negotiate an extension, be able to figure out some way of getting that number down and being able to keep Dunlap, who, as you mentioned earlier, was very successful during his time in Seattle. I mean, he only had 6 sacks last year, and so that doesn't look very impressive, but 5 of those 6 sacks came during his 8 games in Seattle. He was effective in the playoff game where Seattle struggled, obviously, in the loss to the Rams, but he was effective in that game as well. He had a couple of quarterback hits. He had a quarterback hit and 2 passes broken up. So he was effective even when he wasn't getting after the quarterback. And so that's the thing, is you would like to have thought Seattle would be able to bring him back. At the same time, he's 32 years old. He was due, $13, $14 million. And so it would have made sense for Seattle to be able to extend him. With Seattle being up against the salary cap the way that they are, however, he was basically the most obvious candidate, I think, to release and to try and recoup some of that money. And like you said, maybe you are able to bring him back. Maybe you give him this time to kind of play the game and see, let his agent kind of see which players or which teams out there might be players for him to potentially sign with, and then see if you can create a little bit of get a feel for his market and maybe to bring him back after the fact.
There were reports out there, and I was one of them that ended up releasing this report, that Carlos Dunlap and the team had made some progress on extension talks, but then speaking with a few other sources very close to the situation, that was refuted, that there was an offer maybe put on the table, but there haven't been talks since that point. They were tabled. And so I think from the Seahawks perspective, maybe they're doing a solid for Dunlap here, letting him hit the market a little bit before the start of free agency to get him a chance to really start talking with other teams. He's free to sign with anybody now. So there's more risk associated with that. If a team throws an offer at him before the start of free agency and he jumps at it, now you have lost your number one veteran pass rusher from last season, a guy that really saved your season in the second half with the impact that he made up front. I mean, this team had 31 sacks in the last 8 games of the season. No other team in the NFL had that many. They were number one in that category. And we're talking about a defense that the first 8 games was one of the worst in the NFL. So it was a cumulative effect. Having Dunlap there, obviously the individual impact, the 14 quarterback hits that he had in those 8 games, 5 sacks, consistently coming up with clutch plays. But when you consider the domino effect, how a number of other defensive players really stepped their games up when he arrived. Jaren Reed had 5.5 sacks in the last 9 games, and he had 2 sacks in the playoff game. One of them resulted from pressure that Dunlap provided off the edge. So he was a beneficiary. We saw Benson Mayoa break out with 4 sacks. Alton Robinson had 3 in his last 9 games. And so everybody on that pass rush really elevated their game once Carlos Dunlap had arrived and gave them a true, legitimate number one pass rusher. This guy really changed the complexion of this defense overnight, just him coming out there. And we saw the difference over those last 2 months. And so I guess I anticipated there was going to be a better chance that these two sides were going to have some discussions about an extension. Nothing ever really got off the ground, though. And so now Dunlap gets to test free agency for the first time in his career. And once again, the Seahawks face the prospect that they are going to have to reset everything with their pass rush. Now, they are hoping to get Darrell Taylor back. They'll have Alton Robinson. Benson Mayoa could be re-signed at a fairly affordable rate. And maybe Dunlap comes back to him. This is a free agent class that has a saturation of veteran pass rushers. And there's not much money to spend, especially with the salary cap going down to around $180, $185 million. Teams just don't have money. So it's certainly possible that Dunlap could find his way back to Seattle. That's what the organization is hoping for. But at the same time, when you consider how strong Dunlap finished the season, the impact that he had on other players, and the fact J.J. Watt was able to go out and get $23 million guaranteed after he put up 5 sacks in all of last season, and he's the same age as Dunlap, something tells me there's going to be more interest there than some are anticipating, and that may make it very difficult for the Seahawks to get him back.
Yeah, I think it is. I think that teams are going to struggle a little bit, I believe, with just the idea that the Carlos Dunlap was as unproductive as he was over the first half of the season in Cincinnati. And some of that was he just wasn't seeing the field as much, but he was truly unproductive. You mentioned the 14 quarterback hits with the Seahawks. He only had 4. In the in the half of the season that he spent in Cincinnati, in the first part of the year, again, 32 years old, he may not get that big contract out there, but he is still, when healthy, a very, very effective defensive end. In my opinion, he's one of the top 15 or 20 out there. I wouldn't necessarily put him in the top 10, but I think that he definitely can be your kind of number one defensive end. I think that you extrapolate his statistics over the season. And this, as we just mentioned, wasn't a fantastic season for him, but he easily would have got to that 10 sack marker. And so that's what every NFL team is looking for. And it's 6'6", 285 pounds. I mean, he is just a physical presence out there. So, that's all the things. I think that there's a chance that it's going to be fascinating to see what type of offer that he gets out there. I think this is a very risky move from Seattle. I think that they need to have that pass rush, especially with the concerns they're going to have at the cornerback position, unless they're going to allocate those funds maybe to some type of an extension with Shaquille Griffin or go for some other cornerback that they think is out there. Then otherwise, you are losing a key part of your pass rush. But I am happy, Corbin, that you mentioned about the fact that there is a saturated defensive end market out there in terms of free agents. There are some big names, besides Dunlap, Leonard Williams, Clowney all over again, Justin Houston, Ngakoue, Kerrigan, Tyrone Crawford,
Matt Judon.
Exactly. Matt Judon is another one that you have to mention. To me, that's what is interesting about this is there's going to be so many teams. They're going to do such a bloodletting with the salary cap this year. They're going to have to release so many good players that, I think that this is just the tip of the iceberg on who that you're going to see possibly be released from Seattle and then certainly from a bunch of other teams throughout the league over the next 9 days.
Yeah, there's really a chance that we could see a few more veteran rushers that hit the market. And the more saturated things become, the tougher it's going to be for players that are on the other side of 30, like Carlos Dunlap, to be able to get big contracts and a lot of guaranteed money. And if he sees that opportunity is not necessarily there and the market doesn't come to fruition the way that he and his agent are hoping it will, then he enjoyed his time in Seattle. I could certainly see him coming back. But again, you see the finish that he had, the versatility he brings to the table as a run defender as well as a pass rusher. The fact he finished last season on such a strong note, Something tells me there will be plenty of interest on the market. We'll see if that's enough to prevent him from coming back to Seattle, or if we'll see him return to the Pacific Northwest in 2021. When we come back from the second quarter, it's Mock Draft Monday. We had all of our listeners throwing together their mocks this week with very specific details, six different position groups that had to be addressed in this week's mock draft. We're going to look at two specific submissions and break down the selections made to bolster the Seahawks roster. When we return, you're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. It's Mock Draft Monday. Rob, we kind of mixed things up a little bit this week. Last weekend, it was all offensive linemen for our Mock Draft Monday. This time around, we're raising the stakes a little bit. All of our listeners had to pick six different position groups, and the Seahawks only have four draft picks right now. So that meant fans had to do some maneuvering to add at least two more picks. They had to add a guard. They had to add a tackle, a running back, a receiver, a corner, and a linebacker. Those six positions, you were allowed to pick other spots if you had more than six draft picks. And so we get to look at a wide array of different positions in this week's Mock Draft Monday. Our first submission here, Jaspreet Singh. We've got six selections for the Seahawks. It covers all six position groups that our entrants were required to submit for this mock draft. And we're going to start at the guard position, pick 62. Seahawks did trade down with the Green Bay Packers to move down six spots and add a couple of picks late on day three with that trade down. Trey Smith out of Tennessee, you and I have had a chance to talk about him quite a bit. If we're talking guard prospects that Seattle has loved the last two or three years, like Damian Lewis last year coming out of LSU, Trey Smith certainly fits the bill at 330-plus pounds. He's got the mauling play style, the big body, physical run blocker, would certainly fit what the Seahawks have been looking for. Again, though, we don't know if that's necessarily going to be the type of guard that they're wanting to add at the left guard position or if they're going to be looking for lighter guards that have a bit more mobility or flexibility.
That's going to be one of the huge factors here is going to be which type of player they're looking for, because Trey Smith is very much better suited to being that kind of downhill power player than asking him to get out and move around as in a wide zone scheme. He can do that. He is remarkably light on his feet for a man of his size, but you're right, Corb. I mean, he is all a 6'5", 335 pounds. And so his power, I think, is really intriguing, because to me, one of the things you're going to have to obviously try to slow down is Aaron Donald. And what has been most successful has been the bigger guys being able to push Aaron Donald away or be able to use their girth to be able to at least try to shield some of that, the space that he's able to slither through so effectively. So to me, this is one of those players that I think would fit in with what the Seahawks are looking to do. There has been some questions about Smith's health. He struggled a little bit with all, a variety of different issues, but the most serious of which was some blood clots in his lungs. And so that led to some time off the field and not being able to play. Supposedly everything's good to go and healthy. But at the same time, with Seattle having the limited number of draft picks that they have, then you know that they're going to have to be a little bit cautious about any time they're taking a player that has any kind of medical risk, certainly one as seriously as Trey's.
Now, we have a blocker there. Now we're going to have the guy that's going to be running behind the blocking of Trey Smith, and that's at pick 129 here. We've got another Trey, so the Seahawks are just basically turning themselves into the Seattle Trays here. But Trey Sermon, the new face of the backfield coming out of Ohio State. Now, you watch the tape, there's a lot to love about Trey Sermon. Not necessarily a home run hitter per se, but he's got plenty of explosiveness when he gets to the second level, a guy that can make you miss. He runs with his pads, a very physical runner, around 212, 215 pounds. He is in that wheelhouse as far as the size running back the Seahawks like to have back there. He plays with that physical presence. He can catch the football. Doesn't have a lot of carries under his belt. And honestly, I view that as a positive in this case because he doesn't have a lot of wear and tear coming into the NFL. But part of the reason he hasn't gotten a lot of opportunities is because there are some durability questions. He got knocked out early in the national championship game against Alabama, wasn't able to make an impact in that game. He's had a few other nicks and bumps during his college career, whether he was at Oklahoma or when he wrapped things up at Ohio State. But this is a guy that'll hold on to the football. He's a hard-nosed runner that it seems like hasn't come close to hitting his ceiling yet. This is a player that in the right scheme, as long as he can stay healthy, has the potential to evolve into a workhorse every down running back.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think that's one of the reasons why he would be very high on Seattle's list as well. I think he fits in with Seattle's scheme. I think that they like the competitive spirit that he showed. I mean, he was originally in Oklahoma, made that transfer to Ohio State because he realized that they were in need of a back that to carry the load. And that was going to be a national championship contending type of an opportunity. And so I think that Seattle is one of those clubs that has always kind of valued that. But you mentioned, Corbin, the durability concerns. It was disappointing just to see Sermon not be able to play in the national championship game. Started the game, got hurt early on, and the Buckeyes never were able to compete. That resonates with scouts. They can see that, you know, it's the timing of that. And unfortunately, the team had grown reliant on Sermon. He is a terrific player. But just what a deflating aspect it was when he wasn't able to compete in that game. I think that's something that also will stick with Seattle. So to me, Sermon is one of those guys I think that fits in with the Seahawks. I don't know that it'd be at this point, but again, that's because this is not a great running back class. It's probably about where you'd have to take him. I don't know that they will, but I think that it makes some sense. He is their type of a guy, good physical football player. And a player that, again, I think is going to be chomping at the bit for an opportunity to get back onto the field and prove that his very impressive career when he had his opportunities, that it shouldn't be lost on his final disappointing performance in the national championship game.
And I could see him being a player like Chris Carson that, you know, never was able to fully seize a starting job at the college level, in part because of durability. But you see the every down back talent, the skill set that is there. You put him in the right scheme, again, as long as he can stay healthy, that is a guy that is a Seahawky running back, no question about it. Now, at pick 142, going back to the offensive line, another pick that was acquired in the trade down, Robert Hainsey out of Notre Dame. Again, we talk about the Fighting Irish, it feels like, every week and their offensive line, because it seems like every year, three or four offensive linemen are getting drafted. And Hainsey is another one that could go as early as the second or third round, depending on what teams are looking for. Because unlike some of the tackles in this draft class, Hainsey is not a mauler. This is not a guy that is necessarily going to overpower people at the point of attack. Not the strongest lower body. He's got big arms, more of an upper body lifter, so to speak. But this is a guy that is nimble on his feet, and he is best suited for that wide zone blocking scheme, which we may see Seattle do a lot more of with Shane Waldron as the play caller, a very intelligent player to go with it. So if they are going to be modifying their offense more towards what the Rams do, and they're looking for somebody that can eventually be the successor to Dwayne Brown, Robert Hainsey is a player that I think after a year or two of development could absolutely be that player.
Yeah, I think he could be. That's a bold statement. I got another bold statement for you, though. I think that, you know, Quinn Meinerz was the guard that created all the buzz the Senior Bowl, and he stole a lot of the spotlight from Robert Hainsey. That I think that Hainsey is getting a lot more attention from NFL scouts right now than maybe he's getting the attention from NFL scouts that Meinerz is getting from the media right now, because Hainsey is moving up the board. I mean, he was a guy that really impressed at the Senior Bowl practices with his positional versatility. You mentioned that at Notre Dame, that they just churn out NFL prospects along the offensive line with such regularity, such consistency, and not only that, but those players wind up going to the NFL, becoming starters fairly immediately and having success. And so that's the thing about Hainsey, is that this is a guy that, again, played multiple positions. He was a two-time team captain at Notre Dame. And those are the kind of guys that if you can get in the middle rounds, especially as you're doing that little bit of a schematic switch along the offensive line, I think Hainsey makes a lot of sense. To me, he's one of my favorite things about this mock draft, and I do like this mock draft.
My favorite pick in this mock draft is coming up here at 168, though. One of my darlings, one of my draft crushes, and maybe it's because I'm from the state of Indiana and I've gotten to see this kid develop for the Hoosiers, but Wop Fillier, the receiver out of Indiana, what a playmaker that we're talking about here. He was a two-star recruit coming out of high school, very lightly recruited. The Hoosiers took a shot on him. First couple years, he had a few injuries, didn't produce a lot of gaudy statistics, but he really broke out in 2019 with over 1,000 receiving yards, 5 touchdowns, averaged more than 14 yards per reception, a guy that's ran the ball a fair amount, 21 carries in his college career for the Hoosiers, a guy that was impacted by up and down quarterback play. His starting quarterback gets hurt last year in an already shortened season, but he did put up 495 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns. His yards per reception went way down, and some of that had to do with the quarterback situation, but this guy is a playmaker, and what I really love about Fillier, he kind of reminds me of Doug Baldwin. I'm not saying this just because it's a Seahawks show, but this is a kid that as a two-star recruit, he just has that chronic chip on his shoulder that Doug Baldwin always played with, extremely competitive on the field, competitive at the catch point, a guy that will break tackles. He's going to do whatever he can to be successful on the field. That's why he has had a great college career when he was a two-star recruit. I just feel like this guy has Pete Carroll receiver written all over him. He would be an immediate favorite. This is a guy that would immediately jump out, and you would love to team a guy like this up that's got a lot of short to intermediate game potential with Tyler Lockett as well as DK Metcalf.
No, I agree with you. I think that, you know, whenever you mention a name like Doug Baldwin, people get all excited. And you know, it's not to say that we think that Wop Fillier is going to have the success Doug Baldwin had, obviously. But at the same time, I have to agree with you, Corbin. I mean, when you watch Wop Fillier play, he is one of the most competitive guys on the field. And you can't often say that the wide receiver position, especially undersized wide receivers. I mean, there's a lot of survivors out there, but there's not a lot of the toughest guy on the team is a wide receiver. And I don't know that everybody in Indiana would say that, but Fillier, you know, I've used that expression before, that some guys just play like a dog. You know, they're just some of the tough guys. They're the junkyard dog. Everybody in the building knows you're a tough guy. And Fillier plays like that. And so I think that he's a fun fit for Seattle. I think he is strictly a slot receiver, you know, in my opinion. But he's one of those little, those quick guys, those tough guys who can handle that role. There's going to be a lot of, this is a fun draft class in that it's got a lot of very small, very speedy, elusive kind of slot receivers that could be stars until they get hit a couple of times over the middle in the NFL, and then they're going to disappear. And Wop Fillier is one of those guys who I think will be able to spin off of that the way he always has and still be successful. So to me, in day three, yeah, this is a pick I really like.
Yeah, the last two picks on here could be intriguing for the Seahawks too. At 209, Keith Taylor, the corner out of Washington, obviously well-known in the Pacific Northwest, had to work his way into the lineup because of the talent that was in front of him at the cornerback position during his time with the Huskies, but had a very solid week in Mobile at the Senior Bowl, has the type of size and length the Seahawks like a willing tackler in the run game, has good movement skills. I don't know that he's got elite movement skills, but certainly a guy that can open his hips up and he can run with faster receivers. A player that's going to have to learn that kick step technique, but certainly has a lot of the traits that the Seahawks are looking for. We've mentioned him in a few other mock drafts. He is certainly a player that the Seahawks may look at on day three. And Amari Gaynor, the linebacker out of Florida State at 215, you and I would dive into that, but Gaynor, unfortunately, this draft was done on Pro Football Focus. He went back to Florida State and will not be in the draft.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that I think that that our mock drafter here, Mr. Jaspreet Singh, a wonderful job. I think that the selections that you made make a lot of sense schematically in terms of the talent and just the style of play. I think that it really fits in with Seattle. I think it's one of the better mocks that we've gone over so far, to be honest with you. But those last two picks, Keith Taylor, the corner from Washington, he's going to be long gone past 209. So again, tip of the cap to Mr. Singh. But at the same time, I don't believe that Keith Taylor is going to be anywhere around at pick number 209. UW fans are paying attention and should expect that he is going to be picked probably 100 picks earlier than that. And as you mentioned, Corbin Gaynor is a terrific player. If any team would be very interested in drafting him at 215, but he is underclassman, is going back to Florida State, and I expect that he'll be drafted much, much higher than that in 2022.
Yeah, he's a player going back that could be in the mix to get picked second, third, maybe even a first-round caliber selection going back. A handful of guys that made that decision, especially coming off a COVID-19 shortened season. When we return to the third quarter, we're going to look at our second mock draft of the day. We'll be back here shortly. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar. 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Gluten-free and preservative-free as well. Visit BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON20 and you'll get 20% off your order. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. It's Mock Draft Monday. Second one here comes from Cassio B. And Cassio took a little different approach, traded down to pick 66. The last draft was pick 62 before the Seahawks finally selected. But going with a tackle with the first selection, and I'm going to be raving about this kid, but we'll get your input here first. At pick 66, one of the best tackles in this draft class coming from the FCS level, Dylan Radins out of North Dakota State.
Yeah, that's the thing. I really like this mock draft, as well, Corbin. And, after gushing about the first one, I didn't think that I would like the second one quite as much. But as I'm looking at it now, to start off with Dylan Radins from North Dakota State, as you mentioned, at pick 66, I think if Radins is available at that point, then this is going to be an easy selection. To me, he is exactly the type of left tackle that you're looking for to develop behind Dwayne Brown. That he has very light feet. He is well versed in the wide zone. He uses his hands well. He's got length. He's any questions that you had about his level of competition, he faced that going to the Senior Bowl, where he fared very well. But at the same time, this is a terrific class yet again of offensive tackles. There will be some very good offensive tackles who drop. I don't think that Radins is going to be one of them. But again, because of the small school factor, then that is a possibility. And so if he is available, and I do think there will be a good tackle available to Seattle, potentially they're right around this spot of the draft. So I think that there is a chance they go in this exact direction. I think Radins would be one of those players that would make an awful lot of sense.
What I love about this kid, the first time that I had a chance to sit down and watch his film, I looked at his size, around 305 pounds, thought a little light, probably not the type of prospect the Seahawks should be looking at. And then I watched him just drive a defensive end. And I know it's FCS competition, but just drove him 10 yards off the ball. And I immediately was like, well, I need to pay a little bit closer attention to this kid. He plays with a mean streak. He is a punisher. And He showed that at the Senior Bowl too. This is a guy that is not going to back down from anybody. And the fact that he's 6'5", you can add some weight to him pretty easy. I think you can get him up to 315, 320, no problem. And with his athletic ability, his sound technique, and that nastiness, that mean streak that he plays with, you've got a player that's already pretty well-rounded for an FCS prospect coming into the NFL. And what intrigues me most about him as a Seahawks pick, right now they don't have a tackle spot open with Duane Brown and Brandon Shell still under contract through this year. But this kid could jump right in at left guard, in my opinion, because of the way he plays the game, the mean streak he's got, the athletic ability. You're running wide zone, this kid's going to be able to do it. But he can play that man downhill style run game as well, given his physicality and his mean streak. And so this is a guy I think can jump right in at guard, and then you can slide him out to left tackle or even right tackle. I love the positional versatility. He'll be ready to take over at one of those two spots down the road for the Seahawks. I would be jubilant if they made this pick at pick 66.
Yeah, no, I definitely would be excited about his, you know, I am excited about Ray Duns as a talent. And I think that he is one of those guys that, you know, it's not often that you see small school players are going to be able to go into the NFL and enjoy success quickly. I think that he can. I personally like him better outside than inside. But at the same time, again, at this point in the draft, he'd be a steal. And I do expect there to be a couple of tackles that are starting caliber tackles that should be available at the late portion of the second round, early portion of the third round. Going on to the next Seahawks next selection, as you mentioned, there was a big trade in this particular mock draft, and so Seattle is drafting at 66, and then is not on the board again, Corbin, until pick 147. So a huge drop off there. But because then they have the next three of the next roughly 25 picks, and so. I think that this is going to be Seattle's kind of opportunity to shine, and in this mock draft, they do so, in my opinion, with three players I really like. I'm just going to mention all three of them real quick, and then we'll kind of break them down. But the center from Drake Jackson from Kentucky, we've talked about a lot, but a player I love. I think he's a terrific fit in the system that I believe Seattle is going to be using. Chuba Hubbard, the running back from Oklahoma State. So you're looking to replace Chris Carson from Oklahoma State with Chuba Hubbard, who is, oh, by the way, led all of college football in rushing in 2019. And then the linebacker, Jamin Davis. If you are going to lose a guy like a KJ Wright, then you know that you're going to have to add some bodies to that position. I like what Seattle already has at outside linebacker, but Davis is the all-around playmaker playing at a high level of competition that would make some sense at that point as well.
The two picks I really love here, 147 and 150, getting Drake Jackson and Chuba Hubbard. We talked about Drake Jackson last week. He's undersized, around 290 pounds, but he plays with some punch. He's not going to be a guy that necessarily drives defenders off the ball. He's not going to be a guy that racks up a ton of pancakes, but he is a player that holds up better at the point of attack than you'd anticipate with his size, and he's such a fluid athlete, and he's technically sound. Really was impressed watching his game film at Kentucky against really elite competition in the SEC. And you mentioned that wide zone system, absolutely the perfect fit at that center position. If they don't address it in free agency, Jackson is a guy that I think would be a big addition that could play right away for the Seahawks. And Chuba Hubbard at 150. I'm not as high on Chuba Hubbard as some people are. I've seen some draft analysts that think he could be an early second round pick. And a lot of that has to do with the production. Like you said, 2019, over 2,000 rushing yards and 21 touchdowns at Oklahoma State. He is that true one cut and explode kind of runner. He's very patient. I do see some Le'Veon Bell in the way that he plays from that standpoint. He is going to let the crease open up, and then he explodes through it, makes that one cut, really good vision. He runs with more power than advertised at 208 pounds. Not necessarily a guy that's going to bowl over people, but he'll break tackles. He's a physical runner. And so from that standpoint, he would make sense for the Seahawks. I think he's maybe a little lighter than they prefer at running back, but certainly he's got a lot of the traits they look for at the position. What I don't like about him is how he plays in the passing game in general. Not a guy that necessarily is a bad receiver, but he was never able to develop into a true weapon in that regard, playing in an offense that was built to do that. And his pass protection, we've seen the Seahawks really prioritize that with Travis Homer and DJ Dallas, the last couple running backs that they have picked, that is not a strength in this kid's game at all. And being a former running back coach, that always bothers me. If you see a running back that doesn't necessarily play with physicality in that regard, and he doesn't consistently, you once in a while will see him go up and make a block. But to me, that is a huge red flag if you want him to be an every down back in the NFL.
That's a really good perspective, Corbin. I agree with you again. I think that's Chuba Hubbard to me is, he is a thoroughbred. I mean, he is a guy that can just get out and outrace people to the end zone. And I do expect that to come back. I do expect him to put up some kind of eye-popping results in the 40-yard dash. This was an absolute track superstar in high school and wound up going to Oklahoma State because he knew that Mike Gundy's offense was going to put up ridiculous numbers, and it did so. And then, unfortunately, he got hurt this past year and wasn't able to have nearly the success. Came out after only, like, I think, 5 games. But at the same time, the concerns that we all have about Hubbard in pass protection and in the passing game in general, just the toughness in general. He does run upright. He is not the pile mover that a traditional back that has had that kind of success normally is. And so he is a little bit more finesse, and that has been the exact opposite of the types of backs that Seattle has focused on in the past. So that would be my only question about this selection. I do like the pick, because I think that Seattle may still I think that they can't help themselves. I think they're going to want to take a running back just because they really always want to add juice at that position and believe in their ability to sometimes catch lightning in a bottle. Hubbard, it would be an interesting selection for them just because he differs in so many ways what they've prioritized in the past.
Yeah, but maybe with the scheme change, this would be a better fit in their zone blocking scheme that they're going to be running, that Shane Waldron's going to be coordinating. Potentially, they're going to be looking for different style running backs too. It might not just affect the linemen that are blocking in front. And so there is some intrigue there. I see some things as a former running back coach that kind of jump out to me, like, it's one thing to miss on pass protection stuff. It's another thing to feel like, where's the physicality? Where's the 1-2? And I didn't see that. That bothers me. So maybe that's just me, having a vendetta against the kid that I shouldn't. But that bothers me at the running back position, especially in today's NFL. You better be able to pass protect if you want to play consistent snaps in this league. The last two picks in this mock draft at 192, Tamorian Terry out of Florida State, and 209, Elijah Griffin, the corner out of USC. I'll talk about Terry here for a minute, and then I'll give you the floor on Griffin, because I know he's a player that you are really fired up about. Terry is your typical trait-based prospect. I mean, when you look at this kid on the field, 6'4", a little over 200 pounds, he looks like he should be a stud NFL receiver. He can run like a deer. He's got the athletic traits, the ability to jump out of a stadium. You name it, he can do all that stuff. And he did have a 1,000-yard season for the Florida State Seminoles in 2019. But he has had major issues with staying healthy. That's my first big red flag. And the second thing, this kid's got stone hands at times. His numbers, I can't even imagine what they would have looked at. It's a microcosm of the Florida State program the last 3 or 4 years, Rob. This kid's game, because you see the physical traits and you see the flashy plays, and then you see him drop several passes. And that's been the story of Florida State. They just fundamentally have not been able to put things together. And that's why a storied program has lost so many games the last couple of years. Could this kid end up being a late round steal with the right coaching? Absolutely. You see flashes on game tape of this kid having the ability that he could be a second, third round pick, but the injury issues and the fact he's dropped passes, sometimes his routes don't look like they're completed. There just are some things that would scare me picking this kid. Maybe a 6th or 7th round flyer because of his athletic traits would be worth it. Right team gets a hold of him, he can end up being a steal, but I do have my reservations.
No, I have my reservations as well, but I think that's one of the points is that this is a late round selection. I believe this would be in the, you know, late sixth, seventh round. And the same kind of thing, we were kind of knocking the Hubbard selection before, you know, that's a pick 150. You're talking about late fourth compensatory or early fifth round. So we got to give our mock drafter here a little bit of credit because I think that they've done a pretty nice job, Cassio B, with their finding some potentially falling stars. I mean, I would agree with you, Corbin. That to me, when I think of Terry, I think of a guy that you do see the flashes of talent, but at the same time, the durability issues are concerning. That's probably why he is likely available at this spot. And I think that's probably about where he's going to go. Somebody will take him, but they're going to take him on day three. Same thing here with Elijah Griffin. You talked about durability issues with Terry, who is built like an NFL guy. Griffin has a little bit of a slight frame for the NFL, but at the same time, and he's had durability issues. He's had both of his shoulders worked on. His back has created issues for him. He was healthy all year this past season, was honorable mention all Pac-12. He does have great fluidity in his hips. He can change directions very quickly, accelerates smoothly. He gets his hands on the football, just doesn't actually turn it into interceptions. I believe he has 9 career passes broken up, but only 1 career interception. That is obviously something that Seattle has prioritized in the past, but he does have some boisterous play to him. For those people who are hip-hop, 1990s kind of fans, he is the son of the one and only Warren G. And so you can kind of see some of that personality in his play. In that way, we talked about this before with some of the different schemes and style fits and things like that. Elijah Griffin, obviously from USC and Pete Carroll's ties there. Griffin plays a Seahawks kind of brand of football, and he likes to play. He likes to play hard, and he likes to have some fun on the field too. And so he's another one. If he was available in the late rounds, even though he hasn't checked all of their boxes in terms of what they normally like at the cornerback position, he's somebody that I think is going to get drafted on day three as well and could surprise people, as could Terry.
And you know the success of DJ Reed may have altered what Seattle is willing to look at the corner position. So they may take a closer peek at a smaller corner like an Elijah Griffin that plays with that peskiness, that brings the energy on the field, is a solid tackler, fluid hips, has a lot of the physical traits in terms of athleticism that you are looking for at the position. Only has 1 interception in his career, but he has shown that he can get his hands on the football. So that might be something where he just hasn't been able to reel in the interceptions, and he's certainly capable of it. So I think you get him at that stage of the draft. He could maybe play some slot corner for you. You could maybe play him on the outside, even though he's not quite the length that you're normally looking for, but certainly has some of the traits the Seahawks like to have at the cornerback position. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. When we come back for our Tuesday show, we're going to look back at the 2019 draft class for the Seahawks. They've now got 2 seasons under their belt. We know one player has been an absolute stud, but how has the rest of the draft class looked up to this point? And we're going to start our free agency preview looking at edge rushers. Carlos Dunlap's been released. What are some other players the Seahawks might look at to try to replace him if they're not able to bring Dunlap back on a new contract? Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.